Another episode of Bits and Beyond. I am delighted to introduce Ms. Prerna Goyal, a distinguished alum of Bits Pilani, whose passion and innovation has set her apart. She excels in various fields like being a business advisor, fintech, and business expert. Not only this, but she is an avid social media enthusiast and an entrepreneur. Your collaborative spirit and ability to thrive in these diverse terms has left a lasting impact on the university community. So I'll begin with my first question. Could you share a bit about your journey, like from Bits Pilani to where you are now? And what are some key paths, like key moments that shaped your career?
Absolutely. Firstly, thank you so much for inviting me to this podcast. It feels amazing to have this conversation with current students of Pilani, because Pilani obviously played a very significant role in my, not just career journey, but in my personal journey as well. So I went to Pilani. I'm a 2002 graduate, so 1998 to 2002. I did my undergrad in computer science, so I was A7. And after Pilani, I joined a company called Texas Instruments. I actually did my PS2 there and got an opportunity to work there after that. Did that for around 3 years and decided, actually realized I did not really enjoy the job of a software developer as much. And so I decided to explore more the business side of the world. For that, I went to do my MBA. I did my MBA in a university called Queen's University in Canada. And the reason I chose Canada was for two reasons. One, this was a one-year program. It was very much geared towards students of science and technology, so it was a much easier transition. And two, it was much easier to immigrate to Canada. So I was keen to spend some time outside of India, and obviously immigration processes are quite critical to explore. So after my MBA, I went to do my investment banking. So I joined a Canadian bank called Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce, or CIBC. I joined a group called Leveraged Finance, which is a specialist group in investment banking that essentially looks at a certain types of transactions called LBOs and MBOs, leveraged buyouts and management buyouts. And I did that for around 5 years, really enjoyed it, but also realized that what I really loved was understanding how businesses work. Whereas when you are in a group like Leveraged Finance, you do understand to some extent how businesses work, but your focus is predominantly on structuring a deal or looking at their capital structure. So you don't really get to see behind the scenes of what happens in all of the various departments in an organization. So to understand that, I moved into the retail banking side because I wanted to do and expose myself to multiple different parts of a bank and see how a bank works, essentially.
When you were in Canada only?
Yeah. So at this time, this was all in Canada. So I spent around 10 years in Canada. So I moved into a company called Capital One, which is a pretty big name in the credit card space. So this is kind of when I first entered payments. And payments as a kind of vertical wasn't really a big thing back then. This is back in 2010, I would say. Yeah, so it's been a while. And since 2010, in some shape or form, I have worked in the payments industry. So I spent around 5 years with Capital One, did a bunch of different roles, got to learn a lot of different things. And as part of my role at Capital One, I moved to the UK. So I moved to the UK in 2014. So I was with Capital One for around 5 years as well. And when I moved to the UK, the whole fintech revolution was just starting off in the UK, right? Some of the new challenger banks and some of the innovation had just started to take off. And payments was actually becoming a thing at that time, right? Everybody was talking about as if payments is this amazing thing that you need to do. So I joined a challenger bank here. It's called Metro Bank. It was one of the first challenger banks in the UK. And I got lucky to actually meet an alumni of Capital One who was working there. And I was responsible for designing and executing their payment strategy. So that's kind of where I really solidified my understanding in payments industry. And I did that only for a year, because after a year, I met this gentleman called Nick Ogden. Now, Nick Ogden is a pretty big name in the fintech space in UK and Europe. He is the guy who founded Worldpay, which is a massive acquirer at this point. And I met him, and he was starting to build a new clearing bank in the UK, and he was looking for his founding team, and he asked me if I wanted to join. And I had never really worked in a startup at this point. I didn't really know what startups were, and I was like, this sounds like a really exciting opportunity, but super risky. But what the hell, I'm not never going to get this opportunity again, so let me go for it. So I joined Clear Bank as one of the founding members, and I think it changed my life. I think I loved kind of the first 18 months of working in a small group of people who were trying to build this thing, which had never been done before. We hadn't built a clearing bank in the UK for 250 years. So it was the first time we were building it with modern technology. Nobody even knew how to do this, right? Nobody had done it. Nobody knew how schemes worked and how to connect to all of these different payment schemes in a short period of time. And it was absolutely amazing. I absolutely loved it. I had been working at this point for, I would say, you know, close to 20 years. And it was really the first time in my career that I actually felt energized, right? It didn't feel like a job. So I was with ClearBank for almost 5 years. So I helped them go live, build the team, scale. But I think I also learned during the process that I don't really enjoy once a company starts becoming a company. You know what I mean, right? Like, you have to deal with the politics and micro-optimization and business as usual. So I decided to leave ClearBank in 2021 and decided to try my own thing. So in 2021, I joined a couple of people who were trying to build this payments data platform. We worked at it for almost 18 months and couldn't make it work. It was one of those startups where I think we had a good idea, but I'm not sure if we had the right team. And so after 18 months, decided to call it. And then, you know, opportunistically or serendipity struck, I bumped into an ex-colleague of mine who I worked with at ClearBank when he was one of our customers at ClearBank, And he was building this new bank in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. And he said, do you want to come and join me to build this bank? And I was like, I'm not really sure. I don't really want to go work full time anymore because I eventually do want to build something of my own. So I said, I'll come and help you as an advisor. So I joined him as an advisor, working 2 days a week. And that basically opened up my eyes to this whole world of consulting. I had never been a consultant. I have always been an operator working in an organization. I didn't think I'll enjoy being a consultant, but actually, now having built such a strong understanding and expertise in this space, I actually really like consulting with multiple companies. So I started to build my own consulting practice. Now we are four of us. I've hired a few people. We are consulting clients all over the world, specifically in the fintech space, and helping find the right balance between innovation and compliance. And it's been a lot of fun. And along the way, when I left ClearBank, I also realized that I didn't want to just focus on my work. I also wanted to do other things with my life because I had worked extremely hard for so many years and singularly focused on my career that I never really had a chance to explore other things that I was passionate about. So at this time, I also started an impact advisory and investment company with a childhood friend of mine, actually, who's in the impact space for a very long time. called Vriksh Impact Partners. So we are a small company that essentially opportunistically invests in, but predominantly works with impact and not-for-profit businesses to help them achieve their objectives. It's a passion project. We didn't build this to, you know, make ourselves rich, but because we believe in the cause. And then I'm also in parallel helping out and co-own a healthcare practice with my sister, who's a doctor, who didn't really have a lot of business background, so needed somebody who can take care of the business aspects of the business. So that's what I do.
So are there like any specific sectors or like types of startups that like specifically capture your interest and you would want to invest?
Yeah, so it's driven by the verticals that we believe in. So as I said, it's a passion project. So it's very much aligned with what we believe the world needs. So there are three verticals. So one is any businesses that are helping improve gender diversity or inclusivity in the world. So whether it's female driven or focused on female empowerment or any other type of diversity, really. So that's kind of one vertical. The other one is plant-based businesses. So both my partner and I are vegetarians, vegans. We believe plant-based is the future of food and life, really. So any businesses that are operating in that space. And then broadly, anything that is in the climate change impact space. So we don't really look at anything in terms of where it is at in its life cycle. We don't necessarily look at that it has to be a not-for-profit or for-profit. It's where we think we can make a difference. But as long as they are aligned to these three verticals, that's where we operate.
I think it's very inspiring and also very rare these days because everybody is just looking out to like maximize profit.
Yeah, so I think for us, it was important, right? Like I think we have our core businesses. So she is a CEO of another social impact business in Indonesia. I have my consulting practice and other interests. So we realize that we live a very privileged life, both of us, that we have our core businesses that generate revenue for us and gives us enough cash flow to keep us going. And we've been lucky to have been exposed to a lot of different things in life that we now have experience that we can share. So for us, it was important to separate commerciality from what we truly believed in this venture. Obviously, if we make money at the end of it, that's great, but that doesn't necessarily drive us in terms of our core hypothesis.
So my next question is like, there are a lot of students who struggle with the transition from like academics to professional world. So how did you navigate this transition and like what advice would you have for these college graduates?
I think the biggest advice I would give, and I see this a lot in current generation, is to have patience, right? And to take your time. There is no hurry. I started my business in my 40s, right? And according to today's standards, that's probably I'm being unsuccessful, right? But I don't feel like that. I feel like I'm starting a business when I know what business I want to start and what is the objective, what is the reason for me to start that. So I spend, as I said, a significant amount of my career just learning, just going through the process of what it takes to be a professional, right? I started right at the bottom, worked my way up, and I took the time. I got promotions when I deserved, not just because. And I think every time you get a promotion when you deserve, it's the best feeling in the world, right? So I think it's patience. It's realizing that everybody's journey, everybody's path is different. So maybe somebody else may transition into building their own business right after university or even at university. That doesn't mean that's the only path or that's the only right path, right? So I think having patience and just solidifying your core understanding in whatever your area of interest, area of expertise is, I think is important. And I think that's something that I see is missing in today. People are so impatient. People want everything to happen right away. And sometimes it does, but then it catches up with you later on, right? Like at the end of the day, your peak might happen earlier or your peak might happen later. It will happen. So just give it some time and go on that journey.
Yeah, like what would you have to say about people facing rejections? Because when we are in college and we don't get into a specific club or department, it feels like the end of the world. And then eventually you realize it's not that big.
Well, rejection is part of life, right? And actually, it's the most important part of life because it teaches you how to first realize that you as an individual is not invincible, right? And that not everything is going to come your way. So actually, it's a good thing that you experience rejection early on in your life, especially if you want to go on an entrepreneurial journey, which I know a lot of kids in BITS especially are aspiring to do. They have to just accept the fact that every day you're going to face multiple rejections. And the moment you start looking at them as rejections, oh my God, my world is coming to an end, it's going to be a very difficult journey, right? So you got to just change the narrative and you got to find a way to internalize that rejection is a part of life. And it's actually the most important part of life because that's what teaches you who you are and how you deal with such situations in life.
Okay. So could you tell us a little more about your podcast Fly that focuses on self-love, and then also like how did this initiative come about?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I mentioned, when I left ClearBank, that's the name of the startup I was at in 2021, I wanted to not just focus on my career, but I also wanted to focus on myself and my own journey. Up until that point, you know, I was getting close to the big 4-0 in terms of my age. And as you go through life journey, you start thinking about what your life has been about. What have you achieved? What have you not achieved? Have you really lived your life the way you wanted to? So a lot of kind of different things were happening at that time. You know, I was going through this kind of introspection of where am I at in my life? But I also, when I left ClearBank, I said, I'm not going to just focus on my career. I want to really explore other parts of my personality. And, you know, one of the reasons why those first 18 months at ClearBank were so amazing for me were because I was finally doing work in a setting with people and in a way that wasn't necessarily what was expected of me. At that point in time in my career, I was expected to be a C-suite in some big organization, leading a big team of people. That was what my journey, or I was conditioned to believe that my journey should have been. But I was doing this work where I was in the trenches, doing all kinds of work with really young kids and old people, all kinds of people with all kinds of experiences and backgrounds. And we were all in this together, right? I think there was this aha moment that what I have been conditioned to believe in terms of what my life should be is very different than what I truly enjoy doing and where I really get energy from. And that kind of started a bit of this introspective journey for me on understanding who I am, what is it that I enjoy doing, what is it that I love doing. Until that point, I had never really thought about any of that, right? I come from a very academic family who was very academically oriented. So I did really well in school, went to Pilani, did well in Pilani, went to Texas Instruments, did well there. So it had been like, you know, a journey of what is expected from a high performing kid and then a high performing adult. And then, you know, and my path had been pretty traditional, right? Investment banking and then senior roles in banks. So the last thing I ever thought about is what is the life I want to build? What is it that I want to do? And at that point, I realized I actually don't really want to be a C-suite in a big organization. I don't care for titles. I don't care for that exposure. And I was getting all of that, right? I was on that path and I was already operating at that level, but it didn't make me happy. What things I really wanted to work on, even if they didn't make me money, even if they didn't give me any exposure, even if nobody liked it. So that's when I really started to get behind this concept of self-love, self-acceptance, self-worth. And actually, for the first time in my life, I started thinking about it beyond how we view self-love, right? We think self-love is taking some time off, going for a run, just doing, you know, self-care thing. Self-care is a part of self-love, but it's not self-love. And for me, that had a big, big impact. And I actually started to slowly make peace with a lot of things in my life. I'm nowhere close to done on that journey. I mean, if you ask my friends and my family, they think there is a lot of work I still need to do. But yeah. I think what highlighted for me is how important that concept is and how lost that concept is on people like us who are so academically career driven and are conditioned to believe that life has a very singular path. So I decided to start this podcast to try to bring stories and concepts and conversations on this topic with people. I have to be very honest, I don't get to spend as much time on it as I would like to. Again, I didn't start this podcast to make it the best podcast in the world. I don't necessarily think about it as a commercial thing. I do it because it made an impact on me. And if it can help even one other person out there to start thinking about their lives in a different way, I think the podcast has achieved its goal. So that's really kind of the story behind the podcast. I love meeting people who have gone through similar journeys. Every time I talk to somebody and their journey, it helps me think about my own journey and hopefully takes me further on this path. But that's really the story of hashtag fly.
No, it's actually like very inspiring to know that like you're not alone and there are people still dealing with like self-love issues and all of that.
Oh, I think especially my generation wasn't as enlightened. I would say, you know, the current generation is a lot more aware of these concepts. We were one of those generations that was never really taught anything beyond work, 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 money, success. Success was a very singular thing that we were taught. So I actually, as you know, I recently had our reunion, 25th reunion at Pilani and a lot of my batchmates. And this was a very big topic of conversation for a lot of us because a lot of us are going through this realization. And it's a very important time in our lives to really think about what our lives need to be and what they have been.
So like, as you mentioned the reunion, I would like to ask, is it difficult to like maintain contacts once you're out of the institute and like as you grow in your career?
Absolutely. And especially there are few reasons, right? One, when we graduated, we didn't really have as much connectivity as we do now, right? So think about 2002, when social media was just starting out, phones were, we used to have those brick Nokia phones. So, you know, we didn't really had an opportunity to be as connected in the initial few years. And that's when you kind of set the stage for long-term network, right? So we did lose contact. A lot of us lost contact for a number of years, which slowly over a period of time as social media started to become more prevalent in our lives and, you know, WhatsApp came in, slowly and steadily we started to get in touch with friends. But even after that, it was very much cursory, hello, how are you, birthday wishes, that type of a thing. Because everybody is just busy with their lives. Life does take over and you got to prioritize keeping in touch with people. And that's not easy. That's not easy at all. So that was one reason. The other reason is obviously you are singularly focused on building your life, whether that's personal life or professional life. If you happen to be in the same city, if you happen to work in the same company, you know, the situational friendships survive, but other friendships are more difficult to keep up with, right? You obviously, there is a small group of people you always stay in touch with. They might be your wingies, they might be your department people, they might be just friends you've made, whatever the connection was. There's a very small group of people you stay in touch with. And some people do it better than the others. Like I know people from Pilani who have all stayed in touch with their wingies. The wings have like bonded over the years. I know my husband is like that. He's not from Pilani, he's from IIT, but he has a very strong wing group that hangs out. I was in touch with a few people here and there, but not a lot. But that's because, again, personality plays into it as well, right? So actually, the reunion, and as we started talking about the reunion, has suddenly triggered, and maybe again, it has to do with the fact that we are getting old and a bit nostalgic. And as I said, thinking about life a little bit more. The reunion has been a massive catalyst to get back in touch with a lot of people. And, you know, I feel like the friendships we are making now hopefully will survive much longer. Because again, we are at the stage in our lives that we are not as obsessed with our lives and careers and all of that. Things are a lot more stable for more people. So looking forward to how it stays after this reunion.
Other than that, like, how was the reunion for your batch? Like, did it bring back all the memories?
Oh, absolutely. It was absolutely amazing. It was a lot of fun. We were there for 4 days and it was as if we had regressed back to our younger selves. But this time we didn't have to worry about compres and grades and departments and all of that. We could just go have fun. So it was a lot of fun. Yes.
So how do you like maintain a sense of balance and well-being in your life? Like, especially considering your involvement in all the various activities?
You know, it's a good question. And I have a very structured calendar. So I live by my calendar or diary, as we say it in the UK. So I have very clear kind of slots for different things. Everything is planned and I stick by that, right? That's the only way I can keep my sanity, especially given all of the different things that I am exploring and working on. I've dedicated time and days for different things. And that allows me, so time management and how you structure your day becomes very important. I have always been one of those people who was involved in a lot of things. Variety and diversity of activity has been important to me for a very long time. So I think over the years, I've figured out a way that works for me. So each person just needs to figure out what works for them, right? For me, as I said, it's slots in my diary, everything is planned. And so when things move, it has massive impacts on the downstream activities. But yeah, I think that's really how I kind of manage the variety.
So like as an alum of Bitspilani, how do you feel like your education and experience at the institute influenced your career and personal growth?
Oh, absolutely. It was the most important step in my journey, right? I think when you go to Pilani, at least during our time again, I'm putting, it's important to have the context because things might be a little different now. We were not as connected with the outside world, right? So we, and there was only one Pilani, the Pilani, right? There wasn't the variants that we have today. And as we know, Pilani is in the middle of nowhere. It's not easy to go meet your friends and family back home. And at that time, we were not as connected. So we didn't have the internet. We didn't have access to all kinds of things, even on campus. So it was the very first time in our lives that we really learned how to be truly independent and not be influenced by the support systems that we had back home. So for me, outside of the academics, and bluntly, I don't use anything I learned in Pilani. I stopped using it a very long time ago because it changed my career, right? I moved into investment banking and yeah, I mean, obviously doing engineering puts that core competencies in you around logical thinking, analytical thinking, ability to connect dots and think outside the box and all of the great stuff. But I think the key was to really be able to deal with what life throws at you on your own, right? And that was so ingrained in us in those 4 years at Pilani because we were there all on our own, cut off from the rest of the world, trying to figure this out. If you're lucky, you find a good group of friends. If you're not lucky, you don't. So you have to navigate it on your own. And I think the other thing, so that's kind of one part of the puzzle. And that is such an important skill to have when you go on this journey, whether it's career or your personal life, is this ability to deal with whatever gets thrown at you, this concept of personal resilience, right? That you will keep going back at it and you'll keep dealing with it no matter what happens. And that was ingrained in us in Pilani because of the way it was structured for us, right? We were away in this nothing to do town, just us, right? And at that age, when you're figuring out who you are, so you're not really always nice to each other and you're quite judgmental and you're going through all kinds of stuff physically and emotionally. And the other thing was, I think one thing Pilani is very good at or was very good at is this concept of exposing you to a lot of different things, right? So it wasn't just academics, it was the clubs, it was the entertainment, it was just extracurricular activities and everything that goes with having that experience, which I think not all engineering colleges, at least at our time, were doing. So I think this concept that you need all of these other things to have a rich, fulfilling life. And actually, you build so many skills and so many competencies, which you won't if you were just focused on ACADS, right? And I have to admit, I was very academically oriented in Pilani, but even I was exposed to a lot of things. So if I had actually fully embraced the experience of Pilani at that time more than I did, I would have had even more experiences, right? So I think this combination of ability to deal with whatever gets thrown at you or personal resilience and ability to, you know, be this fungible, multifaceted personality or skill, having this skill set is a very powerful tool that comes in very handy no matter what you do in your life, personally and professionally, right? You become this person who can deal with anything and work on anything and explore anything. And that all happened in Pilani, right?
Yes.
So very, very important step in my journey for sure.
So like as you mentioned, you were in the leading UK banks, Clear Bank, which is very impressive. So could you like tell us some of the key challenges that you faced and like how do you overcome in such a competitive and dynamic industry?
So I think challenges For me, I think the biggest challenge was, as I said, until that point in time, I had been in these established organizations, right? Very structured work, very structured roles. You know what you're doing. There's a lot of kind of stability, and the risk you're dealing with is pretty small, right? So from going from that to moving into an absolute blank sheet of paper, and trying to figure out how to build something from scratch was quite daunting, both from a technical expertise perspective, but also from a competency perspective, right? Because you have to completely change the way you think. So obviously you have to learn, you know, how a particular payment scheme works and how a bank works. Nobody really knows how a bank works until you build a bank, right? You can work in multiple banks, but you'll only know certain parts of the bank. And now I can say I can build banks, right? Like I've built, like that wasn't the last bank I built. So I know how to build banks and how banks work. But you have to learn that skill set. But also, yeah, I had to change the way I think about things, right? I can't really think about things in a, this is how things are always done way. There is no cheat sheet, right? It's literally a blank sheet of paper. So you have to figure out a way to find answers outside of what's available to you. And you have to be comfortable with, you know, I may not get this right. I'm going to build something. I'm going to try and then we'll see where it goes. And the stakes are pretty high. So I think those were some of the challenges. I think, you know, that was also the time I worked the hardest in my life. And I worked in leverage finance, which has long hours. But when you're working in a startup like that, but you just, your whole life belongs to it. And that comes, that's a double-edged sword, right? On one hand, it's the most exhilarating experience. On the other hand, it is hard work, right? It's hard, not just for you, but your family and friends as well, because you are missing. For the first 2 years, I was not attending any parties, any functions, anything. I was barely traveling. So yeah, so you got to embrace that. How do you deal with it? I think you got to go back to those two things, right? Which I talked about, personal resilience and fungibility. Right. So you got to remember that one, no matter what life throws at you, you can deal with it. Right. And you may not be successful, but you will always find a way to find success in life. And I think bluntly, because I was experiencing this so much later in my career and so much later in my life, I think I had a lot more tools in my toolkit to deal with it, because I wasn't fresh out of college, never experienced anything like this before. Situation. I had been working for a long time. So even if you don't experience things in that magnified way, you experience elements of it throughout your career, right? So I had a lot more maturity to think about it in the right way. And again, being able to do different things, which, as I said, the seeds were sown in me at Pilani. But if you look at my career, even though I've been in banking, I've done lots of different things in banking. So I knew I can pick up something and I can deliver on. And I think the third thing, which is very important in this, is when I joined ClearBank, it wasn't for success. It wasn't because I was trying to do something. It was just like, oh, this is a cool opportunity. I'm never going to get an opportunity like this again, maybe. So why not I do it? So this competitiveness, at least for the first 18 to 24 months, was pretty non-existent, really. There was no time to think about, am I doing better than anybody else? What is it? What are other people up to? It was just, let's do this, right? That changes after the company stabilizes a little bit, and then all of those insecurities come back in, and you start thinking about, you know, you start comparing and all of that. But that's a topic for another day, probably. But yeah, so I think three of those things really helped me deal with the transition.
But no, it's generally, it's like very refreshing to see somebody take a new startup and then embrace those challenges for such a long time. It's very commendable.
It is. I think it's been a turning point in my career. If I had not done it, I would have probably continued on a path that most people do. And I would have been successful. I have no doubt about it, right? Most people from Pilani eventually find success in life, whatever that definition of success is. I would have been traditionally successful, but would I have been really enjoying that journey? I'm not sure about it.
I think it's only like an example of how we should just take up new things when they come our way and not hesitate about it.
Absolutely. And I have done that throughout, right? Like, I think one of the things that I've absolutely always done in my career is, even though it is within, until I moved into ClearBank, it had been within more kind of risk appropriate and less risky way. When a new thing came along in my work, I always said, yeah, let's do it. Let's try it, right? So even moving out from investment banking and retail banking. I still remember this conversation I had with my MD at that time. And he's like, why would you do that? Nobody does that. It's like taking a step back. I was like, no, I don't see it as a step back. I just want to learn about something else and see where it takes me. I took a massive pay cut and I was literally starting from the bottom again, right? But it taught me again two things. One, that I can do it. I can go into another industry and I can do it. But two, it just opened my eyes to something different and opened new paths and journeys. So I think we got to be open to it. We got to try different things and we got to give it time. I was not always patient. I am an impatient person by nature. So it's easy for me to say patient, but that's one of the learnings for me in life is things take time. When things are meant to be for you with hard work, by being at the right place at the right time and just really putting in your time, good things will happen. And if they don't happen, some other good things will happen. So being open to that is also very important.
So you also got named as ETA's 40 under 40 and women leader in Paycheck, which is like an exceptional achievement. So I would ask you, like, what advice do you have for other aspiring women leaders in tech and finance, or just women leaders in general who are just at the start of their career?
I would repeat, I don't think it has anything to do with being a man or a woman, right? It's just, you know, have the patience and do your work. Focus on the work, focus on learning, focus on embracing new opportunities, and find a good mentor and a good sponsor in an organization, right? I was very lucky to have good mentors in every organization that I have worked in. Even now I have people who, you know, we don't have formal mentoring relationship, but they are my mentors. They are absolutely the people I go to get advice from. So get good mentors. And if you're working in an organization in a kind of more traditional setup, get a sponsor. And a sponsor is a person who will push you, right? Who will vouch for you and who will sponsor you to succeed in an organization. So I think having those two things and just really focusing on learning and embracing new things and being resilient about it is what worked for me, right? Beyond that, I'm sure there are other things. There are lots of books out there. I'm not a big fan of textbook knowledge, but those are the things that worked for me.
Thank you so much, ma'am. It was so insightful and great to have you. I had so much learning.
Thank you so much for taking the time and allowing me to share.
No, thank you for like taking our time and doing this with us.